Welcome to Season 4 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication. Proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you're looking for a board game table, bag, playmat, or great board games, check them out at letsallplay.com.
Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 88, the Season 4 Finale. Today we're joined by Amanda Rivera, who has actually joined my team as the person who's been editing these podcasts, which is why it's been sounding significantly better than when I was doing it myself. So I'm super excited to put her on the show and have her actually start talking about what it is that she's been up to here in the gaming industry. So let's kick it off. Amanda, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun listening and learning about games from the podcast. My background in games is pretty standard. I grew up playing the classics with my family, got introduced to the world of D&D by some friends in high school, and I've been playing RPGs ever since. And then I fell down the tabletop rabbit hole in college with my gateway game was actually Munchkin by Steve Jackson Games. So my friends and I would make a ton of house rules and combine the different themed versions to make it heavier and last for way too many hours. I've really been creative and excited about games for forever, but what finally connected me with the actual game design community that you're involved in was attending conventions. I go to a ton of conventions every year, gaming and not gaming conventions, like nerd conventions and stuff. So when I connected with Tabletop Gamers and answered their volunteer call about 2 years ago and met you in combination with that and discovering my love for playtesting through UnPub, finally got me to this point now, working as the marketing manager for Crafty Games, which is an awesome company. And yeah, slowly trying to combine my day job with my love for games. Anyway, that's enough about me. It's time to kind of turn the tables and get your thoughts on the entire Season 4 of Game Design Unboxed and learn a little bit about what you've been doing in your life. The season ran for 22 episodes starting on July 11th of last year with Julie Ahern's Barbarian Battlegrounds game all the way up to our latest episode with Sen's Mind Management. How do you think the season went?
I think it went really well, but I also want to say it's been really great having you on the show as far as the background stuff. And also a fun plug, I actually got one of your bosses on the podcast for next season. So when we talk about that, I'll kind of talk about it as well. I think this season went really well. I've always loved having a mix between the really well-known games, like we had Wingspan, we had Elizabeth on the show finally, which is awesome, but then some lesser-known designers or games, which is always a plus, especially if there's someone who like self-publishes and maybe needs that extra like advertisement or just has like a fun kooky story of trying to take over their own fate as far as self-publishing.
Yeah, that's been really interesting as I edit the episodes and then listen to them afterwards to kind of hear the different perspectives from people who either have published 20 games or people who have published their first game and kind of the trials and tribulations they go through to get there and how they decide to self-publish versus, you know, pitching and things like that. So it's been a really cool journey to see the different things because I think when people play games, they don't think about all the behind the scenes stuff. And this is a great way to get to hear that.
Just looking at Not So Neighborly, my two friends that started up their company, I love it because FamBam Games has such a presence now at different conventions. Like I saw their booth at Origins and it literally looks like you're walking into a little shop. So you're like going in, it has like a little stand, like you're trying to buy, I don't know, like candy or ice cream or something. It's just so interesting to me that this like new publisher that has very much like a light card game, party game-esque vibes can create such an amazing product. And I know that like, I believe Alice works at Amazon and has kind of a more of a marketing background, but it's just so interesting to see how these new publishers can start up and like take these chances on these games.
Yeah, it's really cool to see people kind of getting into their passions. So I actually love their booth because even before I knew who they were and their games, I remember bumping into it and remembering it. It's very memorable. So like the colors and the design and the artwork really speaks to that. And I feel like when you do walk around the Florida convention, you get to see all of these different people and what they're doing. And those things stand out to you, right? It's like, that's what catches your eye. So to kind of have these people from different backgrounds that just love gaming, getting into it and like putting together these really cool experiences and really cool booths and things. I think that's something that honestly would be interesting to hear a little bit more about.
That's fair. I should probably start asking those questions.
Thoughts for next season, right?
Very true. But yeah, I was like, I'm trying to think of like all the highlights because it's always crazy just thinking how I have 21 guests every season. But like even just starting out with the Barbarian Battlegrounds with Julie Ahern, that was such a cool way to start the season because I have now run into issues where it's like, okay, like I'm doing development, but now I basically gutted this game and it's more my design than the initial designers. So her kind of going into detail of how to approach that subject was very helpful for me in my own life, but also just like hearing from that perspective, because a lot of designers I know will have their game sent out and then they get limited communication with their publisher and then they get it back and they're like, oh, I don't even know, this isn't really my game. That's like worst case scenario. I think it's so much better when the developers and the publishers are like working hand in hand with their designers, so they know that like those changes are happening. Like I know I still home rule the eBay Buy It Now game that I designed because there's a few tweaks that they made that I'm like, eh, I don't like that. I'm going to home rule it. So that was kind of cool, like listening to Julie talk about the changes she made and like why things happened the way they did and how it like could have potentially have gone wrong had the lines of communication been less than what it was.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to hear kind of those experiences that people have as they make the games, because every single game that's developed and designed and what have you has a completely different story. You never know like what types of things you're going to encounter when you're making yours. So it's definitely good to get that type of perspective. Even some of the stuff she said talking about like being cute and savvy, but like we wanted it to be more than that. I like a game that has dice, but isn't all luck and kind of like, you know, dice placement and stuff. So it's cool to talk about why we did the things we did. So I liked when she talked about how they decided to make it something a little bit, not heavy, but a little heavier than it was, because that's kind of the direction it just ended up going naturally.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when people talk through the different mechanics they chose for the game, especially when they're comparing it to either like an IP or characters that were previously made, because like this was not the first of that line. Similar to when like I did the interview on Disney Sorcerer, like matching the cards up with the characters, so their abilities felt accurate, because like you didn't want like Mrs. Potts having some crazy attack value, because let's be honest, she's not going to be the strongest person or character out there on the battlefield. So I find it very interesting when designers really take the theme or the mechanics and are very thoughtful with it, versus just kind of like, this is a cool game with really cool mechanics, but I don't really know what theme, so let's slap this on. Not to say that's bad, I just think it's really cool when they can actually integrate it in.
I agree. I actually think that was the first episode I ended up editing, was the Disney Sorcerer one. And it's cool. I actually just recently came back from Disney. And it's funny because as I was going around, and it's like you just said, well, Mrs. Potts, like, yeah, she's cool, but she's not going to be the strongest one on the battlefield.
Yeah, she's not the brawler.
Exactly. Yeah, she's not the brawler. But you see people walking around with like Remy on their shoulder at Disney. And you're like, oh, man, okay, what is that giving that person, like a plus what? I really enjoyed hearing about the creativity that went behind character plus ability plus, you know, what they should give you. And that comes into play in a lot of different games, like when games create their own characters too.
I just find it so cool how many different ways you can mesh these mechanics together. I mean, it's like recipes from a cookbook. It's like, oh, okay, using peppers, like let's make some Thai food or let's make some Mexican food. It's just so interesting to see how they can be combined, because I have so many newer designers or people that don't understand what I do ask if you can like trademark or copyright the mechanics, and like no, because otherwise like so many games wouldn't exist, because you could have literally the same mechanics just mixed differently with a different theme and it'd be an entirely new game.
Yeah, exactly, within themes too. I feel like, you know, you have Sorcerer Mickey and then you have Steamboat Willie Mickey, right? It's so like they obviously don't have the same abilities, one's magic, one's not. There are so many games, and I love looking at that, right? You play a new game and you're like, oh, it reminds me of this game, but I love that they did this with it and made a completely different thing out of it. It's so cool.
Oh, totally. And I mean, how IPs split up their stuff is so insane to me, because we'll be like, oh, okay, so this publisher has the rights to the card game. Well, this one has the rights to the miniatures, and this one has the RPG rights. And it's like, they just like slice the pie as thin as they possibly can, just like spreading it out because they want as many products coming out at a time as possible. But you'll end up occasionally having issues where two products will actually come out at the same time from the same IP that are very similar, because when you have so many little slices spread out, it ends up happening that way. Like for one game that I had come out through National Geographic, now owned by Disney, which a bunch of people didn't realize, gave the rights to like card games to both my previous bosses, Underdog Games, but also Blue Marble had it for all those like science kits that a bunch of people liked. And so unknown to us, as they were approving one of the games that we were working on, which was a scavenger hunt, it was called Animal Traits. So it's based more around animals. There's like clues on the back and there's three different animal traits that you're looking for. And you're either trying to find three different items or combinations. Like one item could fit the three categories. Like it could be soft, it could be white, and it could be large, or whatever the three things are. But so we had that come out, but at the same time, basically almost in the exact same month, a scavenger hunt, just National Geographic in general. So like a combination of animals and travel came out with Blue Marble. And so it was like this interesting thing of like, uh-oh, here are two very similar products, both on Amazon, both within a dollar or two pricing of each other. I mean, the differences really were just the theme of it. And the product was slightly different. So like we had a little bag that it came in where they just had a tuck box that you would probably get damaged and throw away. But it's like one of those interesting things when you talk about IPs, and Sen mentioned it a lot in his episode with my management, working with someone who owns like Scooby-Doo versus the creator of like a comic book like Mind Management. You get a lot more flexibility and freedom when you work directly with the creators versus working with a bunch of lawyers, because things slip through the cracks a lot. And then you have a situation like we had, where we had two products out, very similar. And it's like, thankfully, neither tanked the other one. But most times that would happen, like something would tank the other. And then that's not good for anyone, especially the company itself. Like, I'm sure Funko, good reason that they probably got sold over to Goliath was working on IPs is hard. You can't keep reprinting it unless you're paying to keep the IP. The IP can go in and out of people liking it, because I know like Wednesday is right now very huge, kind of like Game of Thrones was really huge. And there's just like, oh, we make a bunch of games with this, but then now no one's watching that show, or it's like over, or it never really turned from a book to a show. Like Hunger Games, like they went Hunger Games book, they went movies, but now it's like, okay, is it gone now? Like, do we make more Hunger Games? I don't know. IP stuff is just so interesting to me. And so I've enjoyed having multiple people on the show talking about their experiences with it.
Yeah, I was just going to actually ask you about Mind Management, because I think that's cool, because that kind of goes into like the comic book world. So you have, like you said, working with the creator who created the comic book Mind Management versus working with Superman or Batman or something like that. You're working directly with them, so you could get a lot more creative, like the artwork on that, how there was like, you know, hidden messages and stuff and all of these different things. You could add so much more character. And not to say it's a bad thing to work with some of these like larger IPs that are owned by, you know, ginormous companies, but it is really cool to get the opportunity, I think, to work on something really, really closely with somebody who really, really is passionate about it, rather than people who are kind of like the keepers of the brand or the keepers of the character. I guess, yeah, all the legal stuff that goes into IPs must really be kind of a pain, but definitely rewarding. Like, it was really cool to hear Sen talk about working with, like, you know, my favorite thing growing up was Scooby-Doo, and now I got to do something with Scooby-Doo. It's kind of like when you hear a comic book writer say, I've always wanted to write this character, and now I'm doing it, and it's the coolest thing in the world. So that probably happens a lot for game designers, too, kind of like it does for other creators.
Oh, totally. I mean, I still would love to do something for mostly DC Comics, but also Marvel. Those are like my two IPs that I really, really want to do something with. But no, I thought it was really cool, like when Sen was talking about my management, how the game was almost an extension of the comic books, which makes me think of like, I'm a huge Avatar The Last Airbender / Legend of Korra fan. And so when they brought over the television show into the comic books, and like, I always joke my cartoon crush is Asami from Legend of Korra. Like, when I got to see her relationship with Korra, like, actually go the romantic route that was kind of like hinted at in the cartoon, but not fully explored until the comic books, I thought that was such a cool way to continue the show on and let the fans have this addition to the world. And so hearing about how with working with those more independent IPs, you actually get to create an extension of the world. Versus like, here are the characters, like no offense to Batman and Superman and all those, but typically when we make a game about it, it's like, we have the Dark Knight comic books. Now we are going to make a game about the experience of that Dark Knight comic book, which is really cool if you can accurately do it and stuff. But also I think it's really interesting to actually add to the world versus just like recycling and reusing what's already there. Very different design perspectives, but I very much enjoyed learning about those things in this season.
I think there's a really cool thing to be said about getting a taste of a universe you really love. People complain about Marvel and it's like, we have movies, we have TV shows, we have everything. And it's almost too much sometimes to keep up with the way they pump things out, right? It's so quick. And there's all of a sudden you turn around and there's seven more TV shows. And if you haven't seen the latest TV show, then you can't watch the next movie. But I think games and specifically even RPGs and stuff give you a really good taste, because there's like, you know, there's an Avatar RPG now and there's RPGs for so many of these universes now that have come out. It's really cool to talk about games that kind of do the same thing. So there was definitely a game this season, the home episode, that was an RPG that was kind of converted into somewhat of a tabletop game. And that's kind of, you know, something that thrusts you into a universe like that.
Yeah, no, that was a cool one, especially since I openly admit all the time I don't play a lot of RPGs versus you, who does. And I told you we will definitely play a one shot at some point. It's on my list for this year to accomplish. But yeah, no, I thought that was really interesting. I especially love when RPGs decide to move past just the let's roll some dice and do some battling, but more so lean into the storytelling, because that's the part that attracts me to RPGs. And using like the cards to do it has always been something that was interesting to me. No offense to dice. Dice are fun. I like buying them. Actually, I feel like more people gift me dice. I have like 3 sets of rainbow dice, I think, in my apartment. And most of them I don't think have ever been used beyond just like looking at them. But yeah, no, that was a really cool one. Did you have a specific, since you are an RPGer, that highlight from that episode?
I think for me, it was just the idea of how do we take, I know I like that they had different themes so that you could play. I think there were either 3 or 4 different themes you could play as with the decks of cards. I've only played a couple of RPGs that were translated into more tabletop experiences, but just the idea of like how they spoke about the process of kind of saying, what's the best way to do this for people who A, play RPGs or don't play RPGs, and B, that you could kind of just jump into it and create a different story every time with using guides. Typically for people who play RPGs, you have all of these books and all of these rules and all of these things, but to be able to take out a couple of things and just throw some cards on the table and be able to tell a story with your friends, I think is extremely, extremely cool. So just being, I've never heard anybody talk about the process of doing that. So to me, it was really the whole conversation of how do we create an RPG with cards instead of, you know, 7 different books that a DM has to go through or something. And not even needing a DM is really cool too. Like to think of a storytelling mechanism that doesn't require somebody running the game, so everybody gets to play a little bit more, is really cool.
I do think that's nice. I always kind of feel bad when I have done a few RPGs. I always kind of force someone else to take on the DM role, even though I feel like I would really enjoy it. It's more, I am intimidated by the thought of reading an entire RPG book, because some of those books I'm like, oh God. Kudos to all you DMs out there. Good. You're doing God's work.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, a lot of the people that you featured this season and in past seasons have been either RPG players who got into tabletop games or trading card, like Magic the Gathering players.
A lot of magic.
Yeah, a lot of magic. There's something to be said about some of these storytelling mechanisms and these like really overarching like rules for deck building and trading cards and things like that, that kind of you see appear in people's game designs. So I wanted to kind of specifically talk about, actually, let's talk about Mission to Planet Hex. I think that was a really cool episode. I really enjoyed, since we're kind of coming off the IP conversation, the fact that there were so many references in that game. There was a lot of really cool sci-fi references in there, which I thought was really cute.
No, it was very cute doing those little Easter eggs of like, oh, if you're a Doctor Who fan, you might be able to notice this. Or like, oh, you like Star Trek? Great. Well, did you check out this little thing? Yeah, I think that's cute when a designer can put their love into the different games that they make. I actually was having a conversation yesterday talking about like one of my games, and it was pointed out that I apparently have a knack for sliding in gay stuff or inappropriate jokes into a lot of my games. And I didn't realize it. And then I was like, oh my God, you're right. I just keep doing this. Like even in my Nat Geo Secret Clue game, I put a blue-footed booby because I think that bird's name is hilarious.
It's the Danielle stamp of approval.
It's my brand. I find ways to like slide those things in. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know. But I think it's so cute when other people do the exact same thing. So you get to like see a bit of their personality inside their game or inside their rule book or whatever, the artwork. I mean, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it is really cool. And I think something that I've enjoyed, like, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners do as well, is listening to these episodes. And then if you haven't played the game, either going and playing the game or looking up the creator or designer on social and then connecting with them and maybe even getting another game if you played the game that they talked about already and kind of seeing like what that flavor is in there, like what they've inserted or what they've done. I think I've been doing that more and more as I've started to know more designers and look at different games in different ways. It's kind of cool to be like, oh yeah, you know what? I could see this person's brand, like Elizabeth, right? Wingspan. And then I actually backed the new game coming out about the mushrooms.
Undergrove is a very good game. I playtested it, so you will be happy with that purchase.
I'm very excited. But, you know, all of her games, it's not just, oh, it's about nature, right? There's so much care and love that goes into the theming and the little notes on each card and all that stuff, like Wingspan, like there's a fact on each card. And I think there's just so much work and effort that goes into it. And it's super, super appreciated.
Yeah, honestly, when we were talking, I know Elizabeth and I ended up talking over an hour, and her and I have become really close friends over the past like few years, but I found it so interesting when she had to switch the cards over into like other languages, because a lot of like those endgame abilities were dependent upon the names of these birds and just like little things like that, that I would have never thought about how it could affect the game design, or just how she started on like, hey, I love bird watching. I took like a thing that I love and I made it into this game, but then working with Stonemaier back and forth to make those adjustments, and her doing like basically most of her own development but with notes. I found that really, really cool and interesting, and especially just like Jamie going, hey, we're gonna make one for like all these different areas of the world, let's see what we can do. And just the idea that they initially focused on North America and just kind of kept going and building off that brand, and like to the point where now there's like Wormspan that came out with Connie as the designer and Elizabeth as the developer, even though a lot of people don't seem to realize that Connie was the designer, even though it's like clearly marked on the box. But Wingspan for me, like I always get asked like, hey, what's your favorite game? And Wingspan has always been my answer, but it's because I do really love the game. Granted, I have now played it so many times, the initial one, that I'm a little overdosed on it, but it's still my favorite because the art is amazing, the graphics are great. It is like an intro to hobby games that has replaced Catan for me and my friends, because I can actually get them to play it. Like now both of my siblings own this game. Like my brother's boyfriend is a bird watcher, so he got it for them. And my sister and her boyfriend, like her boyfriend actually works up Arizona and gets to work with animals every day. So they have a copy of Wingspan too. And neither group are like heavy gamers by any chance or like circumstance. Like I think the heaviest thing my brother has played without me being the one to force him into it was like Ticket to Ride Europe. But for that game to be one that they saw me take pictures of and be like, oh, what's that? And like wanted me to teach them how to play was amazing. Like it has become my new like go-to entry into hobby games game, not like entry into gaming, but entry into more hobby games, because it is, I mean, more complicated than handing off like Cascadia or something. And it also just ushered in a bunch of new nature themes and like people starting to take risks on things that weren't like fantasy and trains, and also helped a lot of women start to get seen, even though Elizabeth hates the fact that so many people are like, oh, she's like one of the only female designers. She's like, no. I created an entire database to show how many women are out there. You should look at their games. It's not just me, just because I ended up in like New York Times. Like I am not the only designer. Like she has just done a lot. Thanks to this game, like she got a platform because of this game, which is why it's like my favorite, just in so many different ways. It does so many things right.
You hope that the person who gets that spotlight and does an amazing thing does something amazing with it. And a lot of the movements and the things that she's done because of the game she created has been really cool to see. Like she's definitely kind of like you. You guys are both pushing the industry ahead in so many ways for women and underrepresented people. And also the different theming, like you said, like nature, not just nature, but back in the day, there were very specific themes. Like you said, oh, it's trains and it's travel and it's Monopoly money or go for broke money, or everyone kind of focused on the same couple of things. But now we've opened a million doors to your game could be about anything. Like one of the ones this season, Gartenbau, was like about being a gardener and flowers and stuff. And again, another nature theme, but really cool to see somebody taking, whether you start with a mechanic or whether you start with a theme, creating something around that, that brings in not only people who are already game hobbyists, but people who just like that theme. So I think it's really, really helped to expand the industry as a whole too.
And I mean, on a less serious subject, I was going to say, we've been talking about like IPs, we've been talking about just like amazing impacts, but also I find it very interesting when someone makes like a mechanic that is new. And for me, like another thing I wanted to highlight from this season was talking about Holiday Hijinks, which is like an 18 card escape room game that has an app that's compatible with it. And every single one of these games is based on a different holiday. Like I wanted to highlight that one because first off, anyone who's ever made an 18 card game, it's hard. It's really hard to make a good game that fits into that structure. And I know that we had another one, the Exploring Galapagos, also on the show to talk about how they had done that constraint. But to like also do it where it's an escape room and everything is based on these pictures that are on the cards, that you basically have to just like use this app, and the designer does the illustration, the app design, and also the game design. It's kind of crazy. Like that's a Swiss Army knife designer.
kind of like everyone learns a different way. Everyone designs a different way. So it's kind of cool to see like how people work within those constraints and what they do with it. So I actually went out and got one of those little 18 card escape games.
Did you really?
Yeah, just because I was curious. I was like, curious because I thought it would be fun, and curious because I was like, I would really like to see how this was done. Because it's impressive, honestly, to be like, to do so much with so little. Like, it just goes to show you can do anything.
Yeah, no, Jonathan Schaefer is just amazing. Like, I just plugging his brain, because like before and after recording this episode was so interesting too, just like where it came from, like the thought that this and so many other designs came from just creating gifts for someone. Like Smug Owl was the same way, where they're like, we're just going to make this gift or this game as a gift to give to people for like Christmas or whatever. I think it's so cool that that's where like inspiration can strike. And with these like holiday hijinks one, I also love the fact that he talked about that he's running out of holidays that he feels comfortable making the game for, because I think this is a thing that we've talked about, and it's going to come up also in the next season. I have an episode about just like hiring cultural consultants, or like, when do you choose a person to like be on your team to make sure that you are doing a culture justice or like an ethnicity or whatever? Because so often many games are created by like straight white guys, even though like the game is clearly about some historical time in like Chinese past or whatever. And so I found it very interesting that Jonathan really put his foot down. He's like, if I'm going to work on any of these like holidays, like it has to be with a co-designer or someone that is actually celebrating whatever that holiday is, whatever like religion it is or place. And I found that very cool to like have a designer be so self-aware, because I know I've been asked many times because of her story about it. And I always kind of wonder, I'm like, if I had been there in the initial design, would the game look drastically different? Versus like me getting added on like kind of halfway through. I find that very interesting. And so I really appreciated his thoughtfulness and like how he spoke about upcoming games and like themes that he would do and how he would partner with people for them.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important topic to be talked about and for people to hear, because sometimes, you know, you get so excited about something, or you may be somebody who really, really loves a certain country, right? And you visited a bunch of times, but that doesn't mean you're the expert. So I think it's really important for people to think about like, okay, like, you know, how are you going to make this the best it can possibly be, and how are you going to represent this appropriately, and who do you work with to do that? So I'm excited to hear about that next season for sure, and learn more about that.
I always find it interesting that there's probably one episode a season where it's like a lightning in a bottle idea, like Century Spice Road, Emerson, that was like his. But for this season, it was Mantis and just Jeremy and Ken talking about how they had this idea of a push your luck game where you put three colors on the back of the card and then the front of the card's like one of them. And then, yeah, I mean, they tried some other things, but then ultimately, basically their initial design is what ended up getting created by Exploding Kittens and continues to sell really well. And is actually still one of my favorite games introduced to non-gamers as a card game.
Yeah, I also really love the artwork on that game.
Oh, yeah, it's very cute.
It's very cute, very colorful, very cool. And like, yeah, like you said, I think it's a good game to bring to the table kind of for everybody. You know, a lot of the games that Exploding Kittens puts out there have a lot of really fun, silly artwork type things. But I like Mantis because it's different. I had never played a game like that before until I played that. So I really, Push Your Luck is not typically my go-to for games, but I think that's a really well done one. So that was, yeah, that was a cool episode for sure.
There was definitely a lot of stuff. So if anyone hasn't been listening or has only listened to a few episodes, just like go back and find a game that interests you, or if like the description of something I put sounds cool, just go back and listen to them. And like, not just this season, but all the past seasons, check them out, because I've had a lot of really impressive designers and games. And just like, it doesn't matter if you know them or not, because honestly, I have learned a lot from designers who I've never met before, or games that I'd never heard of until they reached out or I knocked into them at some convention.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of good episodes to go back and listen to. And like, you know, scroll through. If there's a game you played, probably cool to see, you know, what the story was behind that. And if it's a game that you're interested in playing, and if it's a game you never heard of or a person you've never heard of, just kind of like, you know, close your eyes and pick an episode and listen, because I think there's a lot to be learned from every episode. And the conversation's always good. And Danielle, I mean, have you designed and developed anything that's come out in the last year? We talked to so many other people, but what's going on for you?
I think I've kind of slightly mentioned a few. So I had my two National Geographic games through Underdog come out. So that was Secret Clue Animals, which was a deduction game that's like played in 15 minutes or less, where I joke it's kind of like a mixture of Codenames meets like Similo meets Animals. And for that one, it came out on my favorite holiday, aka Halloween, and that was really awesome. But the game has done so well that I am excited to say I am working on the sequel. And so I actually created the sequel when I created the animal version. I came up with animals, a travel version, and a cuisine version. And cuisines was actually my favorite one, but clearly animals is the right pick for the first one when it comes to National Geographic. But they approved cuisine coming out, so that should be coming out before Christmas this year. So that's really exciting. And I also got greenlit to start working on other possible versions of the Secret Clue game mechanic or system. I guess system would be the right word. So it was very exciting. Like, this is my first system that it's done well enough where it's going to have multiple games in the line. So that was super exciting for me to see. And then I also created a game called Caution Signs with my co-designer Scott Brady. And kind of the quick story of that was just basically I went to visit my friend Annie in Hawaii. And while I was there, I kept seeing like all these weird caution signs, like, you know, like chicken crossing or don't get hit over the head with a rock, don't get pulled by a riptide or eaten by a shark, or don't step in the lava. And you always know with those caution signs, like there's a reason it's there. It's because some idiot did it multiple times. And so I found it very entertaining. And we were already like messaging about this other game that never came to fruition that he had an idea for. But so when I was like hiking Volcano National Park with Annie and also Tanya from Hasbro, just happened to be there on her anniversary. So we were like walking around and then talking about games. And I was quickly like, oh my God, a drawing game where you are creating caution signs to like warn your friends of oncoming danger. So I was like, Scott, what do you think about this? And he happened to be in Alaska at the same time, also seeing weird signs, like, you know, don't get eaten by a grizzly bear. And we were just like, yeah, let's do this. So as soon as we got back from our separate vacations, we jumped on a call, opened up a Google spreadsheet, and just started making all these cards. Because originally I started like pre-making them. And then he was like, no, let's split it up. And I was like, you're totally right. So I made that. I took it with me to Maine to go visit my friend Jessica. We play tested, figured out that 20-second time limit for drawing, which is perfect. And then also figured out that the nouns especially needed to be either like humans, so like occupation or like a vampire, and then animals was kind of the fit, and like not animals like a snake where it's a very obvious shape, but like a horse drawn very quickly could end up looking like a dog or something because it's like got the four legs, you're going really quick. And so just figuring out the content was huge. And so 2 weeks later, we ended up going to Gen Con and pitching it and ended up getting it signed by my current company, Wise Wizard Games, which I had started right before this season, but thanks to Caution Signs, they had already been talking for quite some time about starting this new imprint called Wacky Wizard Games because they wanted to start doing like kid games, party games, family friendly. I mean, not to say that their games aren't family friendly, like Kapow, I'd say, is very family friendly, Robot Quest Arena. So they had already been thinking for a while that they wanted to do this imprint, but like now they are like, oh, well, we really want this party game. This party game's great. We can kick it off with that. We were already working on Star Realms Academy, which is a family-friendly, like a my first deck builder game, which is like kid-friendly, no reading, only symbols, a more simplistic version. And then we had this other game called Pack the Essentials that had like polyominoes and you're trying to fit cats and clothing into your suitcase, which was like a very cutesy theme that didn't quite fit what they had already been doing at Wise Wizard. So we're like, you know what? If there was going to be a time for us to launch this new imprint, let's do it with this. So they signed my game. We end up announcing at PAX Unplugged that we are doing this new imprint. These are the three new games coming out. And then I also got a new job title from project manager to project director of Wacky Wizard Games, which has been super exciting because in a lot of ways I get to develop all these, I get to project manage all of them, work on like art direction and do inventor relations where I am having designers pitch to me. And honestly, doing an inventor relation is like one of the remaining things I haven't done, I feel like, in the short period of time I've been doing games. But it has made it so I'm way quicker to reject my own ideas, which I think is making me a better designer because I'm like, would I reject myself? Yes. Or would I say, I really like this idea, but it's not for us because of XYZ. So like, there's been a lot going on. And then I've been working on some other games that I can't talk about right now, but hoping to continue to keep my like kind of constant. I feel like I average like 2 to 4 games coming out every year with my name on it as either designer or co-designer. So I'm hoping to kind of keep that rolling for as long as I possibly can until I run out of steam, I guess. And I've got my name on some development credits like Sherlock Solitaire. That's a solo / co-op game that Peter on our team created. He also created Sorcerer And so I got to do development on that. So that's already out. And then I've done development on the Star Realm Academy game coming out, and then Pack the Essentials. And then we also signed this one called Push Push Penguin. And we have some other games. So it'll be kind of cool to also have my name in a different way on some other games that are kind of coming out in the future. So I have been staying busy per usual.
Of course, I wouldn't see it any other way. Well, congrats. That's obviously a lot of awesome games you have coming out. I played a couple of them. They're all a ton of fun. And yeah, obviously the new title change is really great. Obviously super exciting to see Wise Wizards expanding into Wacky Wizard and coming out with all of these new cool games. I think there's something to be said about a company who can do different types of game as well, right? And it's really cool that you're kind of heading up the charge. Just quickly, how does it feel to be on the other side of like people pitching games and stuff? Have you been enjoying it? I know you said it's something you didn't try before, but how does that feel?
It has been interesting. So I started doing it at Tantrum Con, and I very quickly realized I need to set boundaries because I'm too nice. I ended up like skipping a meal to take an impromptu pitch. I did way too many impromptu pitches, where now I am doing more like what my friends do, where they send out a call like, hey, get on my calendar. I maybe will leave like a slot or two open to see games. But we've actually pretty much filled up our queue, at least for what we need. So it's like I'm taking less pitches coming in the future. But I've enjoyed it. I will say that there is a different vibe depending on the designer that is pitching to me, because new designers, they want to know why. They want all the details. And they also want to know like what they could change. And I do say I had like a bad habit in the beginning of being like, oh, this is how I would change it. But it's like, I am not there to develop their game. I am also not there to introduce them to like new publishers, unless I really strongly believe that they would be good with something. But a lot of newer designers kind of want the homework done for them. And I do have a bad habit of overhelping sometimes, which then ends up bringing them back in to me multiple times over. So I've been learning boundaries, which I think is important for me. But then also designers that are more seasoned, they're more similar to me where it's like, I am just a master of rejection at this point. Like, not to say I don't care when I'm rejected, but it's like, I don't need to know the whys, because if I'm rejected, it's normally because it might be timing. It might be just not a good fit. It might be price point. There's just so many reasons, or maybe they just don't like my game, which is totally fine. Like, not every game is for every person, but I do know enough publishers now to know what games I should or shouldn't show them, which a lot of new designers don't do their homework. And I realized that, and I'm like, ooh, not to say I don't want to waste time on a person, but if you haven't done the homework, you're kind of just doing me a disservice by taking up an hour when it's clearly not a fit for Wacky Wizard games. So yeah, I've definitely learned quite a bit from my new role in taking on the adventure relations part of it.
That's awesome. I think there's definitely some good advice for some designers to be said in there as well, besides all the things that you've taken away from being on the other end of the table. Besides all the games coming out and kind of this new position, what else has changed in your life? Any awards or things you want to mention?
Yeah, I found out I got nominated for the Play Creator Awards Rising Star Award, which was honestly a massive surprise because we are the only hobby company that has a person up for an award. I mean, like Eric Lang and Ken Gruhl are up for something, but they are like, it's a Hasbro game they're up with. And then Tony, who I know from The Op, is also up for something, but also I would consider him also more like mass market. Like, so for me and Wacky Wizard Games to be attached to it, to be up for an award was just really awesome, especially because it's based in London. So not a lot of like people from the US, or like if there's people from the US, they're like from Hasbro and Spin Master and like just big global companies. So that was pretty exciting. And I actually did find a way to swing going. Granted, it is mostly out of my own pocket, but I'm excited because my bosses are very supportive of this and they want me to go check it out. And hey, maybe I'll win, or maybe like the Taggy Award I'll lose to yet another Star Wars lightsaber. Regardless, it's just an honor to be nominated and to like have me as a person nominated for the award, not necessarily a game. So that's just been ridiculously nice. And I don't know, it's been cool. Like, I also got asked to be on two more advisory boards. So one is the Tabletop Game Designers Association and the other is the Tabletop Mentorship Program. And even though I don't have a lot of free time, and I do say this when people ask me, they like having my perspective on their advisory boards. And so I'm like, you know what? I can give like this hour or 2 hours or whatever it is a month to help make these programs work and like give my perspectives. So I think it's really sweet that people continue to keep asking me to help them do things. I am learning to say no more because my dance card is getting pretty full at this point. But yeah, so that's exciting. I'm also going to be a special guest coming up at Grand Con for their 10-year anniversary in August. And I've never been to that show. And so that was really awesome for Brian to like ask me to be there. So I'm excited to be there along with like Jonathan Gilmore and Eric Lang, which still blows my mind that I get to be a special guest next to people who have been doing things for years and like have so many games and so many awards. And just, I still feel like I'm an energetic toddler in comparison, but it's really nice to have people ask me to do things like that. So hopefully I'll continue to be able to say yes to at least some of the things.
Of course. And they had to start somewhere as well. So it definitely makes sense that probably for them started feeling, you know, pretty amazing and overwhelming. And I don't know about the over energetic toddler thing, but
that might be exclusive to me.
Yeah, that's your MO. But I think it's one of those where, you know, you got to start somewhere and it's cool to start seeing these things and opportunities trickle in and taking on what you can without burning out and just really putting yourself out there and meeting people and being a part of the industry. Since we're both on the board of Tabletop Gamers, did you want to talk about any of the other organizations you work with? I know you said your card's filling up, so do you mind listing off that Star Wars credit sequence and giving a little blurb about any of these other organizations you're a part of?
Sure. So, I mean, besides the two that I just mentioned, adding on Unpub, the unpublished network that is very much geared towards designers trying to make their unpublished game into a published one, whether that's from self-publishing or reaching out to other publishers. I am on the advisory board for that. And they are actually the ones that kind of soaked up the Tabletop Mentorship Program, which is why I was asked to be a part of that, since I have also been a mentor and a mentee of that program. So I was like, yeah, I can help. I don't have time to be a mentor, but I do have time to like help set up the program. And so there's that. And then of course, yeah, Tabletop Gamers, you and I are both directors for, working on making things pretty, designing some fun little pins, but mostly just promoting the visibility of the queers in the gaming space. I think that is huge. Like, I go to a lot of small conventions, but I tend to bring those ribbons with me. And I have had many people come up to me and just say thank you for that, because I know personally when I enter a space, seeing the like gamer or ally ribbons makes me feel more comfortable being myself and being free to say like, oh, I have a partner and she is a girl or whatever at a game table, because that stuff is hard and it's scary because you don't know how people are going to react and you don't want to be worried when you're just here to play games and just be yourself. So that was really good. But then, of course, we actually just launched a new podcast, which Amanda is also editing, at least until we find a new editor. And that's the Proud to Game podcast, where I am going to be a host interviewing different organizations and people that are working on promoting the LGBTQ plus community inside of games. So that's going to be a fun one. I've already recorded the first episode and we aired it, and then we've got some guests lined up for the future. So that's going to be just a monthly podcast that's going to come out with our monthly newsletter. Man, I'm going to say, like, I probably have some other stuff that I do, but I think that's mostly all of it.
There's always more.
There's other things. Oh, the Young Inventor Challenge. I do judge that every year. So if you've got kiddos in your life, highly recommend. It's in the fall. So just like go to People of Play's website. It used to be called Shy Tag Chicago Toy and Game Fair. And just look up Young Inventor Challenge. Highly recommend. I think it's great. It's like a science fair, except kids with board game ideas. And occasionally they get made into real ones. So highly recommend doing that up.
Yeah, we'll have to put a list after this episode with all the links to all the different things you're involved in and everything you mentioned for people. But I think that's a good segue talking about kids inventing and coming up with cool game ideas. You always ask everybody on the podcast what their tips are for getting into the industry and game design. What are your best tips?
Honestly, networking has been huge for me. Just being able to go to events, which I know is not always possible because maybe you have a job or like you're a single parent or money, there's things there, but also the online communities are a huge way for you to be able to get involved as well. I know it's hard because a lot of people are kind of over social media and people will joke that Facebook's out, but honestly, Facebook is really huge for tabletop games. I highly recommend joining the different communities. Oh, Board Game Besties, that's another one. Duh. That's a Facebook group that I help manage that is geared towards women. Yeah. So like I said, too many, gosh darn it. But yeah, so like I highly recommend just like doing this networking, do some play testing, go to either like Protospiels or Unpubs to test out your games. Cause honestly, you're not going to get farther designing if you just keep play testing with like your family and your immediate friends. You want to test with other designers. You want to test with like people that go to these conventions that are like diehard gamers. But also you need to know like when your product fits specific things. Cause like if you're like FamBam Games and you've got this like cutesy little card game, yeah, most gamers are not going to be super into that if they're someone that plays like Gloomhaven. But yeah, so I would say like networking is huge. Playtesting. If you have an idea, just like don't just write it down, actually prototype it and play it. Because I got so much better at designing from just like constantly making games. And I mean, yeah, you throw things away. And honestly, I love Tabletop Simulator because it's just digital throwaways. So it's less waste. But just getting in the practice of prototyping and creating things and testing things and learning like how to ask the right questions of your playtesters and like timing, how long your explanation of the game is and how long the game itself takes to play. All of that is just important stuff that's just going to grow you as a designer. But like just getting into the industry, you never know that. You never know when a moment of you meeting a person is a few years later going to pay off and get you like a job or a development gig or asked to be on a board of something. So it's just like very much I think of it as paying forward your energy. So it's like if I can just take an extra 10, 15 minutes to talk to someone and give them whatever experience I have, like who knows, a few years later, they might come up to me at an Unpub and say thank you for just some resources I sent them online when they reached out. It doesn't take a lot to just do those little things because it really does help a person out. So yeah, so I would say just like network, pay it forward, prototype, just do it like the Nike commercial.
That's great advice. I actually was a part of the mentorship program last year as a mentee. And one of the best pieces of advice I got was to not be a perfectionist. If you have an idea, don't try to make perfect artwork for it. It's all going to change. Things are going to be like, put it on the table, play it and see how it feels and, you know, see what happens and just test it. So for everyone out there, if you have an idea, just do it.
I'm actually going to steal the show back from you, if that's okay, because I wanted to talk about AllPlay. So AllPlay, if you haven't already noticed when Amanda splices their little like ad or whatever into our show, they have been sponsoring this season, but are also sponsoring next season. And I also wanted to just say like a huge thank you to their team. I got to really meet them about not this Gamma, but last Gamma. And they've been so supportive of the show. And then also just me personally as a designer. And I really want to say their board game table is one of my most used things in my apartment. I freaking love it. And it's amazing for hiding prototypes from my cats because I can like build out the game and then put the planks on top. So it's a cat protector. But yeah, so for anyone who is interested in some fun games, check out AllPlay. If you're interested in getting a board game table that also doubles as your dining room table or your coffee table, or also they apparently have shelving now, which I kind of wish I knew about before I got my Catalyxes. Not that I don't love them, but thank you so much to AllPlay for like helping sponsor the show, and definitely check out what they've got going on because even from like me working in gaming, I look at what they do and how they've done these like standardized box sizes and just like their model for signing games. It's just, they are someone to look at. I see them really expanding into the next level probably within the next year. They are very impressive.
Oh, they are. And speaking of booths, like we were before at trade shows, I love their like library of game style booth that they have at all the trade shows with all the little demo tables for all their quick little games. I think it's so brilliant.
Oh my God. They do such a good job. Honestly, though, highly recommend checking them out in so many different ways. Just like if you're a publisher, you're someone who's like starting to build your brand, look at them as a blueprint. They're doing a really great job. And just like as a thing for the future of this podcast, not only are they sponsoring, but we also have quite a few cool new guests coming up slated for the next season, including you had mentioned that you got a new job and all that good stuff with Crafty Games. And so we do have a Crafty Game popping up called Buru. So we've got them. We've got Conquest Princess, Fashion is Power, Cthulhu, and some other fun games coming up in the next season. So definitely make sure to keep listening. Write reviews because I'm really bad at plugging that and asking people to do it. And yeah, like support the podcast by just like enjoying it and telling me if you have other questions that you think I should be exploring. Like, I don't know, Amanda, did you have anything? I know you mentioned one at the beginning of this episode, but anything else you wish that I'd start asking?
Yeah, I think something I would love to see on a future episode would be kind of like a round table with new and old designers together talking, or maybe like a mentor and mentee together talking about, I don't know, a produced project versus a project in process together. So Like, so many of these things have been talked about on different episodes, but I think it'd be really cool to see that happen in conversation. What about you? Anything cool that you'd like to see or anybody you'd like to get on the show?
I'm not going to lie. I'm very cowboy-esque. I mean, I have my standard things that I want to know, but I kind of like to just see where the conversation goes, because a lot of times I learn something I would have never known. I can't think of anything in particular. I do find it interesting sometimes asking like where inspiration comes from for people, but I've now noticed through asking that question just in my personal life that it comes from everywhere. It's not like a standard answer. So I don't know. I'm sure I'll probably come up with questions on the fly as I continue to do this.
That's the best way to do it. Plus, if there's ever a question that comes up that you're like, ooh, that's good, I should ask people that, you'll just start asking people that. So
yeah, exactly. Well, perfect. So I think I'm going to start wrapping this up. But Amanda, thank you so much for taking on the role of editor. One question I have of you is, what has it been like going from gamer to actually being a part of the industry before we wrap up?
It's been super awesome, kind of like hinted at all the stuff you said earlier. Everyone that I've met or worked with so far has been extremely helpful and willing to talk shop or play games. Typically at my day jobs, I've always felt like I don't have much in common with my coworkers. So it's really cool to be getting more involved with people who share my passion for gaming. Like, part of a project could very well be playing a game or coming up with the best way to share an upcoming game with others who are going to enjoy it. I've found the industry is super accessible to people, even if it might seem really big right now. If you want to get involved, there are so many ways to do so, digitally or in person at shows. Like you mentioned, Board Game Besties. I've been to some of the meetups you put together, and it's really cool. I've met some awesome people there who have, you know, challenged me and just been able to talk to and learn a lot. I've joined some other great online groups and found that I even like teaching games and being behind the booth. So I had a couple of opportunities to work behind booths at shows, and that's been really fun. And I'm a little bit more of a behind the scenes person, so it's been cool to kind of come out of my shell and do a little bit of that. So finding that balance between work and play is probably going to be the trickiest part for a lot of people. But I think there's, you know, there's a business side of things, but overall, I found that the industry is super welcoming and it's an awesome group of people who really want to just create and collaborate. So I think for anybody who wants to get involved, try it. It's definitely worth it. Just like you said, don't burn yourself out and get excited and just play games.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Honestly, I feel like you should be taking over the show. You're so much more eloquently spoken. And I'm just like, oh, you're great. I'm so happy we met. And I'm so happy you've been a part of this team.
Thanks. It's been really cool exploring the industry, and I've learned a ton from you and everybody else. And yeah, I think I'm really excited to see where the industry goes and where we both get to go with our careers and stuff. I hope that the podcast continues and we meet some really cool people, and we'll keep on keeping on.
Well, I mean, AllPlay's already paid for one more season, so we're at least having 22 more episodes.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, no, I plan on continuing this until I either run out of content, which I find very unlikely, or if like something in my personal space changes, which hopefully won't happen. So yeah, but thank you everyone who's been listening to this episode and also this entire season of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. And this was episode 88, aka the season 4 finale. And thanks again, Amanda, for being on the show and taking over as the host and becoming the editor of this podcast. But for anyone who's trying to find you online, mind plugging where you can be found or the organizations you're working for?
Sure. I like to network on LinkedIn in a professional sense. So you could find me under Amanda L. Rivera. For the more fun socials, my handle on Blue Sky, and X and Insta is A Riva Monsta, like A-R-I-V-A, Monsta ending with an A. And I'm going to be ramping up social for Crafty soon, so check out Crafty Games for sure. And Tabletop Gamers, if you want to reach me there, go on our website, tabletopgamers.org. My email's on there. And yeah, definitely excited to work with all you listeners in the future.
Yay! And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on social media, you can check out my Instagram, my Twitter, my Blueski under Token Gamer, and that's G-A-Y-M-E-R. I also have a website, dmrcreativegroup.com, if you want to check out the different games that I've either published or have prototypes of. So thank you for being on the show, and I hope everyone enjoyed this season and enjoys the next season.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or gaming table, check out AllPlay at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.